Welcome to the Body Politic podcast series. The Body Politic is a free online community resource co-created by Alliance for Choice. In the head school pluralist tradition of taking education into our own hands and learning from and through collective activism, we have created a digital learning hub comprising a collection of interactive multimedia resources which anyone can use or even help co-create. We hope you enjoy our latest episode, and if you would like to contact us or get in touch, please contact us at Alliance for Choice via social media, or alternatively, you'll find all our contact details via our website, www.allianceforchoice.com. So, today we are joined by members from Red Umbrella and Street Workers Collective Ireland. You're all very welcome today. We have Theo, Emma and Jade with us. So I'm going to start by asking what your activism involves and what it's all about at Red Umbrella and Street Workers Collective. Who wants to go first?
So I'll go. Red Umbrella began initially as a film festival in 2022. Mm-hmm. So was it 2022? 2023. We conceived with the idea in 2022, and then we organised a couple of events in 2023 leading up to a four-day film festival in October, which involved films and panel discussions and different workshops like by and for sex workers. And after that, we actually realised that what we were doing was so much more than a film festival, mm-hmm. and that it centred not only around like cultural events and creating spaces with and for sex workers, as well as kind of bringing sex worker stories like into mainstream media and also into research and policy. So actually what we're doing is kind of a few things that happen concomitantly. So it's not only in like the cultural spaces and spheres, but also politically.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone would like to add anything to that.
Yeah, I'd say that from the beginning, one of the main values that was underpinning our organizing of the film festival was the decriminalization of sex work specifically. Mm-hmm. And so when we were kind of holding our workshops and all of that, that was something that was kind of moving us to our activism. And we're actually planning to launch some kind of campaign focused on that.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
And then as part of the festival, we raised money to establish the Street Workers Collective. And so the Street Workers Collective Ireland is a fairly new grassroots group of sex workers and ex-sex workers that worked on the street, mm-hmm. As well as supporters. And we're particularly focused on campaigning for the needs of street-based sex workers in addiction, homelessness, or prison and ex-prisoners. So alongside decrim, we put an emphasis on campaigning for anti-poverty measures.
Yeah.
Because for us, that's key to it all, is the poverty or lack of resources that leads a lot of us into sex work in the first place. And we work alongside and as part of Red Umbrella, but always to make sure that street-based sex workers and homeless sex workers, and that are key to everything mm-hmm. that we're doing, because it can be more difficult when you're living in circumstances like that where you're in much more urgent need, the policing is heavier, the threats towards you are heavier, it can be harder to get involved in collective organising. And that is a commitment from Red Umbrella to make sure that we always are. And then for the Street Workers Collective, that we keep our eyes on demanding the resources that we actually need through anti-poverty measures and the like.
Yeah. I'm really struck, Theo, by what you said about decriminalisation, because as someone who has you know, been campaigning for abortion rights, access and justice for a long time. We decided kind of probably about 10 years ago that incremental change on abortion wasn't enough. It had to be through the decriminalization. And because abortion isn't criminal, sex work is not criminal. So always when it comes to things about reproductive justice or bodily autonomy, these things are always the same. The root of oppression is always the same thing. And I'm also struck by what you said about those intersections of oppression too. It does matter if you are poorer. It does matter where you come from. The colour of your skin does matter. It affects you in different kind of, it's the multiplying sort of factor of intersectional oppression. So if you can sort of talk me through about, you know, do you think intersectional feminism is important when it comes to sex work? Do you think it's important that feminists wise up and start talking about sex work? Sort of, what are your views on that?
I think, yes, feminism should be intersectional because otherwise it's not, it's a bit cheap to say it's not my kind of feminism, but I'd actually argue that it's not feminism at all if it's not intersectional. And like, especially just recognizing also that we're four white people sitting around this table. If you can't include people in your feminism or in your activism whose experience you might not know, then it loses its value. So like, and I think it doesn't only go for sex workers. It also, like, it's all the different intersections of oppression, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, if you start saying, okay, all women, but not trans women, okay, all abortion seekers, but not the ones who get later gestational abortions, then that's exceptionalism. That's not feminism. Yeah.
I think if feminism isn't intersectional, then it's not useful to the majority of women across the world, particularly when it comes to sex work. It is an area of work that marginalised people, and particularly marginalised women, are disproportionately more likely to be working in or involved in some way. And if feminists aren't talking about sex work or excluding sex work, they're missing out on an opportunity to hear from people that are at the thin end of the wedge when it comes to the issues that women face more broadly. And actually probably a step further than missing out on an opportunity, they're actively excluding women that need the power of feminism and collective action the most.
I think as well, like, especially when you're thinking and talking about bodily autonomy in conjunction with decriminalization, like, you can't be selective when it comes to bodily autonomy. You can't say, oh yeah, like, these women deserve bodily autonomy, but if you're a sex worker, you don't, and we're going to decide for you what it is you're allowed to do or what you shouldn't do with your body. Yeah. I don't really understand that type of reasoning, because it's like, you can't be for bodily autonomy but against sex work.
Yeah.
Like, it's a contradiction in terms.
Yeah. It's not autonomy at all.
Exactly. Like,
it's someone else's definition
mm-hmm.
of autonomy. Yeah. I suppose that brings me to the Nordic model. I spoke to people about this recently, and it surprises me that it is still sort of held up as some sort of beacon or some sort of reasonable approach to sex work that keeps everyone happy, or is kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, like, legitimate in some way. And it isn't. It endangers sex workers. It forces people to work alone. So I just want to know what your thoughts are and your experience of the Nordic model is, and if you could talk about that.
Get rid of it as soon as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've had it in Ireland for quite a while now, and we know through experience that it is harmful to sex workers. The evidence showed that beforehand from other countries. Now we know directly ourselves what the result of this approach is, and it's been disastrous for sex workers. Mm-hmm. It's one of those solutions that you can paint a pretty face on, that people hear it and think, oh yeah, that sounds fair, without interrogating it and thinking about what it would mean in real terms for sex workers. But we've come to a point now that there's just no question that it's been damaging for sex workers across Ireland, and something needs to change. The only thing that can change is bringing in full decriminalisation.
Yeah. The whole notion of it is so typically patriarchal and institutional from the get-go, because it's like sex workers have to assume the responsibility of the privacy of their clients.
Yeah.
So it just pushes everything back on to the worker. And it's also really patronising as well. And I think one of the things that was, I suppose, cathartic when it came to the abortion rights campaign, the legislation that we have in the north of Ireland is based around asking women and pregnant people what their experience was. That had never been done before. It had never been done. And I was speaking to someone recently who was one of the lawyers who brought the UN CEDAW committee here. And she said, I've never thought about that before. For the first time, the pregnant people were asked. Nobody had asked them. There does come a point where you get sick of putting yourself on the front porch and going, I have to tell the story again. But the stories are really important, whether it's an abortion seeker, whether it's a trans person, whether it's a sex worker. Those stories are really important to inform, you know, things like legislation, things like decriminalisation. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that has been denied to sex workers in bringing the Nordic model in. Sex workers have been systematically excluded at every step of the way when there has been any sort of consultation around bringing the law in the first place, any review, and we're still waiting on the review in the South to come out. It's 5 years late at this point. But just to have a chance to talk at all, it was a battle.
Yeah.
Constantly, they did not want to talk to sex workers, to current sex workers that are experiencing the effects of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to talk to us because they know what we'll say.
They do want to listen.
Yeah, they don't want us being able to put our experiences across, which means that, you know, we have to get our voices out in other ways, whether that's in the media or research. And a lot of research has been done in Ireland since the Nordic model came in.
Amnesty
done a report. Mm-hmm. There's been research that was very favourable to the Nordic model, but shockingly, they didn't actually speak to any sex workers. The research that has actually interviewed sex workers has shown that violence has increased. Sex workers are under more pressure, that were being impacted more acutely by the housing crisis, that the mental health drain from the stress that we're under is extremely damaging to the health of sex workers. And those pieces of research are a collection of our stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went to people to do interviews with groups that actually wanted to hear from us. And when you hear the stats, like the 92% rise in violent crimes, those are they come from our stories, they come from our reports.
Yeah, they're not just statistics.
Yeah, they're not our statistics. Mm-hmm. The street workers research found that 20% of street workers in Dublin and Limerick had been sexually abused by the Gardaí, the same Gardaí that the so-called feminists want to hand over more power to police us to in the name of protecting us.
And welfare checks.
So our stories are out there. Our stories make up the statistics that you hear about what the Nordic model has done to us.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that don't want to listen to us are the ones in government.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, and one of the stories that I think is really revealing when it comes to the impact of the Nordic model, especially in thinking about intersectionality, is the one around there being a spate of attacks against trans migrant women in 2016 in the aftermath of the Nordic model. And when sex workers went to the Gardaí around those attacks, instead of receiving support, what they got instead was evicted from their homes because of the brothel keeping laws that exist in the Nordic model, which mean that if sex workers are working together and living together, that becomes a brothel and then they can be subject to criminal prosecution. And so I think that those stories just kind of demonstrate how this rhetoric and this narrative that exists, that it's moving the criminalization away from sex workers and toward clients. There's actually loads of ways in which that's not the case. And if you just speak with sex workers and hear our stories, you learn the truth.
Yeah. So tell me about what full decriminalization would mean. We were just talking earlier about Belgium recently moving towards full decriminalization. What would that mean for sex workers? Sex work.
I think it has two sides to it. One side is a decrease in stigma and shame, and the other side is more practical, which has to do with actual legislation around labour laws. To decriminalise sex work would imply to move sex work into the realm of work, like labour. So it wouldn't be under criminal legislation anymore, but under labour legislation, which means that sex workers, like in Belgium, would be entitled to maternity leave, to a pension, to healthcare, which are all quite basic things, I think, that everybody should be entitled to.
They're not hard.
Like, regardless of the type of work you carry out.
Yeah. I mean, they are basic things, but they're also things that can really transform a person's life. And, I mean, it should be apparent to anybody that gives it even 2 seconds of thought that if you give somebody more security in their work and more rights in their workplace, it is one of the quickest ways to improving their working conditions and living standards generally.
Mm-hmm. I'm sort of struck by this idea, and again, I know I keep going back to talk about abortion rights, but women and pregnant people in the north of Ireland and the south of Ireland, across the island, they didn't exist when it came to politicians, lawmakers. They were travelling, so therefore abortion seekers did not exist across Ireland, even though we did in our tens of thousands. So there's also this notion that somehow sex workers don't exist. There's an issue with visibility. So how do you think that can be overcome? And how do you think we can not just amplify the voices of sex workers, but also make it more visible so that decision makers take notice?
The very short answer to that is decriminalization. Mm-hmm. Because of what I was saying just now, like about stigma and shame, it's like there is a lack of visibility of sex workers because we're actively discouraged from presenting ourselves in the public space, if you want, because we're constantly told that what we're doing is wrong, morally wrong, or economically wrong, or criminal, in fact.
Yeah.
And so it's not... Safety is another thing. Like, there's a lack of visibility because we choose our own safety over putting ourselves out there, if you want. And I think, again, like, that is something that decrim would accommodate for, is because, it wouldn't longer be a criminal activity, if you want. And that, like, this will take time. Like, it's not like a panacea. It wouldn't solve everything within a week. Yeah. Like, stigma doesn't just dissolve like that. It takes time. Same with abortion, I think. But it's like, it does... The current legislation also informs social attitudes towards certain things.
You know, the consequences for putting yourself out there right now can be really severe, especially when a lot of sex workers in Ireland, north and south, are migrants. It can impact their immigration status. Mm-hmm. If you're known as a sex worker, you're likely to find it more difficult if you're looking to rent anywhere. So your ability to get housing is going to be affected. If you've kids, especially mothers and single mothers that are sex workers, there's a huge fear that you could get interference from social services and you're more likely to be targeted by the police. So there's very real reasons that people are afraid to come out. And I do think that it is a case where decrim needs to happen to allow people to be more open, because it removes some of the trap, you know. And like you said, the stigma, the shame might take a while to dissipate, but at least they wouldn't have the same tools, the same power over us to force us to stay quiet.
Yeah. And I think along that path, decrim as well is sort of along the lines of what you've been saying, more solidarity from the other movements of which we're a part. I mean, I remember seeing a theater piece called Mycelial, and it's a really gorgeous piece by Open Class Theater Company, and it shares the stories of sex workers. But there's one character who speaks and talks about seeing sex workers at all of the other protests, seeing us in the crowds for housing justice, for sort of other abortion rights, you know. And one way to help us get toward decrim and to decrease stigma and shame in the meantime is for us to just keep building solidarity with mm-hmm. other movements, other feminist movements. And so I think our hope too is to, yeah, just keep expanding the community of people who are willing to come out for decrim and for sex workers to sort of demonstrate that intersectional feminism that you're talking about.
And I think the beauty about an intersectional approach is, yeah, it is about the root of oppression, but there's liberation at the intersections as well. And the liberation is through networks, through solidarity, through camaraderie, through pluralism, through collectivism. It is how the abortion rights campaign was won, to the extent that it has been won. We're not there yet, but I think it's the only way. You know, because you don't do it just by plowing your own lane. You just don't do it that way. It isn't life. It isn't how life works, you know, and it certainly isn't how solidarity works. So today is International Day of Elimination of Violence Against Sex Workers. So I suppose I want to ask you in conclusion, what can we do as feminists together, collectively, to amplify voices, but also to inform and educate ourselves as well? You mentioned earlier there was a really good essay by Mariam Khan. Is there anything you could recommend or anything that we should be doing or reading?
I think firstly, paramount is include us in the conversations. Talk to sex workers, you know, find people, inform yourself by... There is a really good book, it's called Revolting Prostitutes. It's kind of the, let's say, entry Bible. I know, I give this book to a lot of people.
I gave this book to my mother.
Yeah, Revolting Prostitutes would be a good one to read. I think inform yourself, yeah, and talk to people. Go to a sex worker process, you know, if there's one in your area.
Mycelial is a great film too. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good.
I think it's still online, actually. You're still able to watch it online.
It is, yeah. I think, yeah.
And also, we do have films posted on the Red Umbrella Film Festival Instagram. So you can search through that and see a lot of the films that we screened at the festival last year. And there's some really good ones in there that will inform people.
I think,
and they come from sex workers all over the world as well, which I think is a key piece in this too. It's really a global movement for decriminalization of sex work.
Yeah, it's an internationalist movement. Yeah. We are, yeah, and we should be. Yeah,
I think as well, just keep an open mind. Like, you don't have to agree with everything we say, but we want to have the conversation. You don't have to think that sex work is empowering. You don't have to agree with everything that we want or that. Like, I think that's why it's good to have conversations, is to also explore perspectives that might not be your own.
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of key in every social movement.
Kind of jumping off from that, for people that don't agree with us, I think anybody can take on or make a commitment to take action to get more money for people. Because if you actually care about sex workers, and other marginalized people, the biggest thing you can do is demand that we get more money, whether it's to campaign for an increase in social welfare, housing security, building more public housing. These are the things that make a difference to sex workers, any group of people that's facing oppression. I think with sex work, people look at it and decide that the solution is policing in the guise of protection, and they don't always look at why we're there in the first place. Yeah. We need money. If you want to help us, campaign to get us more money directly to, especially to women and other marginalised people, because when we're talking about bodily autonomy, to me, it's clear that comes down in large part to money and access to money. If you want people to have choices, money brings choices. So I would like to hear more from feminists about how they plan to get money to sex workers, to women generally, and to other marginalised people. And these are things that I think a lot of us can agree on and can work together more broadly to make that happen.
Practical solidarity.
Practical solidarity.
Just as important.
Yeah. Support your local sex worker.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a brilliant note to end on. Thank you so much. This has been The Body Politic in conversation with Red Umbrella and the Street Workers Collective Ireland.